This episode of the Inner Hole Uprising is sponsored by Zola. Inner Hole
Uprising. Welcome to the Inner Hole Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black pansexual feminist hoe who lives in New York City and whose pronouns are she and her.
And Akua, pronouns she and her, one monogamous, demisexually fluid.
I like that.
Queer person with a tongue twister.
So we have two types of episodes on this show. They are group episodes and interview episodes. On interview episodes, I, Sam, the principal host, and one of my lovely rotating co-hosts, talk to folks with insightful perspectives on sex, love, dating, gender, and or race. And on group episodes, all of the hosts come together to chat about sexual current events in the world, our lives, and yours. This episode is an interview episode, and it is the final installment in our Gender November series, a series that aims to explore gender outside of the cis binary. This episode, we are speaking with Kiawit, a badass trans feminine two-spirit Yoeme and Yoreme musician from Tucson, Arizona. She is dope as hell. Very excited for you guys to listen to this interview. But before we get into that, we have a couple of short segments, and they are
Hoe of the Week.
Shout out you guys, the homies, the listeners, and the fans.
Self-care tip of the week.
We give you some advice on how to care for yourselves.
And cute date idea of the week,
where we give you cute date ideas for that week.
And if you guys would like to follow along on this conversation had on this here podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag Inner Hole Uprising so we can see it, and the hashtag Podin so other people can see it.
And if you want to pay us to speak at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, or other kinds of topics that we discuss on this here show, we would love to. So to book us, send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com. I know that the semester is ending and that a new semester is coming up, and you might want some hoes to get on stage to do a live podcast, or you might want hoes to host your campus festival, or you might want hoes to do sex trivia for your high school class. You can book us for a number of things. We will do it all for a check.
For a bag.
For a cute coint. Let's go on to Hoe of the Week now.
Who are the hoes? Who are the hoes? Who are the hoes of the week?
So we have Turtle XXO, who 2 weeks ago rocked a very lovely photo of her in an Inner Hole Uprising shirt and waited too long to get that shirt because I ran out of printer ink that week and they got their shirt late. And I'm sorry about that, but they were still happy about receiving the shirt. And for that, I thank you. Thank you for your patience.
Yes. Thank you for supporting us.
Yes. 2 weeks ago was our bidet, our 4-year birthday as a podcast.
Oh.
Thank you to everyone who wished us happy birthday. You the all baby. Are so sweet. Yes.
Thank you.
We're not a toddler anymore, right?
No, we're growing out of toddlerhood.
We're
yeah,
growing we're, out of toddlerhood.
We're getting out there. We're getting out there. We walk more now. You know?
Yeah.
Our walks of shame are less rigidy. You know, we don't toddle.
Do we still put crusty Cheetos in our parents' face?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. We will. Yeah.
Okay.
Probably not as frequently.
Yeah, but every now and then.
You have to have this Cheeto.
Are we potty trained?
Yes, hopefully.
Okay.
We are good parents, so yes.
Okay, we are potty trained. All right, that was a very extended metaphor. Also, thank you to Angela D, who paid a hoe last week. And a very special thank you to everyone over at NCSD. So NCSD stands for the National Coalition of STD Directors. And they had us speak at their annual conference called STD Engage, which is basically a conference for providers in the STD and STI space to like share tricks of the trade and stories and learn and just kind of like, I guess, engage with how to be better in the space. Because, you know, you might have heard, and we've talked about on the show, like a lot of STIs are at all-time high rates. And so this is like something that needs to be handled, and it needs to be handled in different kinds of ways, and like different strategies need to be applied. So that's what the purpose of STD Engage is. And some folks from NCSD actually listened to Inner Hoe Uprising, and they were like, invite those niggas. Hopefully they didn't say that, but invite those motherfuckers. And they did, and we went. Rebecca and I went this past week, and it was really amazing.
It was phenomenal.
It was so amazing.
I cried, as I do with everything from my home as I watched them speak.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just like, I just was so over. I was taken over by the pride. I was just like, oh.
A proud mom. Yeah, that was super cool. So just to give you guys a little background, what we talked about, basically our purpose there was to kind of like bridge the gap between people who work in the space, like health professionals in the space and the like, and just like regular people who go through sex, love, and dating and having to engage with STI professionals and medical professionals and things like that. I'll put the link in this episode to the time code where you can look at that and listen to that. It's on NCSD's Facebook page. But yeah, it was like really well received. And people gave us a lot of just a lot of like affirmation for the work that we do with the show and on that stage. So that was like super dope. And I wanted to give a special shout out to the folks at NCSD who we connected with. And if there are folks who we like didn't get to meet, I'm sorry. Thank you too. But here are some names that come off the top of my head. So there's Lakita who reached out to us, and Matt who reached out to us in the first place and really helped us craft the talk that we did. So thank you so much to them. And then also shout out to Leandria, David, who is, I think, the director of NCSD, and Desiree, who we met there, a new listener to the show. Thank you all so much to that team. And then also anyone who's like listening, who learned about us from the conference, shout out to you guys as well. And then also there was like a really cute dad who walked up to us and was like, first of all, you guys were amazing. Second of all, my daughters love your show and my wife loves your show. Hey. So I want to give a special shout out to Sophia, Chloe, and Annie. I don't remember what your dad and husband's name is, but thank you so much for coming up to us and letting us know.
Family podcast.
That was so freaking cute. So shout out to the hoes of the week. And let's go on to self-care tip of the week now.
All right. So this self-care tip of the week, I wrote a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
But didn't make it. The self-care tip of this week is to flex and strengthen your introspective muscle. I was in an introspective space where, yes, I was realizing that I'm in a really good space.
In life?
Not in life.
Oops, I jumped the gun there.
I was thinking about how I feel about my sex, love, and dating life and was really like in a good space.
Okay.
Like I am still a little emotionally burnt out.
Yeah.
But I'm no longer like holding these attachments to toxic partners that I had. Like I am completely free.
Yeah.
Like completely free.
That,
like,
good.
I saw him on Instagram and didn't even have the urge to watch his story. I was just, there's no longer looking for him to see if he's watching my story. Like, just, I didn't care. Yes. Like, I was just free.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's
beautiful. And I was
beautiful.
Like, ooh. And it kind of, it took me back to a place where really 2 years ago, I had a lot of traumatic things happen for me that like threatened my sense of self and threatened my sense of ego. And then that relationship or that partnership or whatever the fuck it was really like just was put the cement on top of that coffin. Yeah. And there was a time where I'm a naturally introspective person, mm-hmm, and that shit just shut down. Mm-hmm. That I could not engage with myself. I could not sit with my emotions. Mm-hmm. And that led to a spiral of very bad decisions. That had led me here 3 years later.
Really?
Ooh, and I just, now I'm at a place where I can do that again, you know?
Yeah.
I can do that again. And it didn't take much. Mm-hmm. It really didn't take much, but that first step was just so scary, mm-hmm, and kind of trying to reconnect with that introspection and use it and get routine again, that it was just like, ooh. But I'm in a good place now.
I feel like the end of a Zoloft commercial right now. You're the bouncing egg. Good.
So I wanted to do a self-care tip about ways that you can slowly get back into flexing your introspective muscle.
Mm-hmm.
There is, Samantha's going to put this link in the description box below, but there is this article on positivepsychology.com that literally goes through like 132 ways.
Oh, wow.
To be introspective.
Okay.
As a person, in a group exercise, like it's extensive. But the main one people talk about is journaling.
Mm-hmm.
And journaling, though I am an advocate for paper to pen catharsis kind of journaling, like writing it down, there is also digital journaling for people who are more on the go or like typing things or are afraid people are going to find their journal, whatever. Mm-hmm. There is digital journaling. There are apps for that and things like that. But also, just your notes section. Me and my notes section and my iPod and my phone.
Me too.
Yo.
I be looking back through those like, damn, and I was kind of angry.
And what I love about it is that you can lock that bitch. You can lock certain notes.
Oh.
So.
What, from other people seeing?
Yeah.
Oh, so you have to put a password? Okay, I didn't even know that. I'm just out here freeballing. So I hate these niggas.
Actually, listen to this.
No, but yeah, actually.
Yeah. So if Samantha was to lock her note, I could go in her note section and certain things will have a lock next to it and I would have to know the password, which I probably do. But I wouldn't invade her privacy like that. But for even people where journaling is just something, because I talk about journaling, I bought myself a journal at the top of this year, still ain't opened it, still ain't wrote not a goddamn thing in it. Okay.
It's kind of funny.
A hot mess. You know, sometimes there's just something within us that is just not letting us take that step. And you have to work towards that as well. You can simply just survey your feelings in the morning and night. Wake up and ask yourself, yo, how am I feeling this morning?
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
It could be one sentence. You could choose one word. It could be a whole sentence. You can let it spiral into thoughts. But
that's important.
Caution with that. Yeah. And doing the same thing, you know, at the end of the day, just seem like, yo, how am I feeling right now? Mm-hmm. What was today like?
Mm-hmm.
And that starts that reflection.
Yes.
And, you know, that leads to more thoughts about what was happening in our day and how we feel about it. And that opens up, you know.
Why did I snap on that person?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, because I was mad. Yeah.
Yes. That opens up those gates and helps you to flex that introspective muscle and, you know, build that for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that is my self-care tip of the week.
Yay. That was very good. Thank you, Akua. Now on to cute date idea of the week.
And I love this. I read this
thank you. Thank
this
you.
This bitch got ideas.
I really do. Someone date me. So my date idea this week, you know, we're into quote unquote holiday season, whatever that means to you. I know not everybody celebrates the Mass of Christ because it's a capitalistic scam. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I kind of just in general dig ornaments and things like that. And
they're
like,
pretty.
Yes, they're very pretty and they're shiny.
Yes,
and I like pretty and shiny things.
So we are toddlers.
Exactly. So this week's cute date idea is to attend either a glass blowing or ornament making class. So if you're tired of paint and sips and hanging your shitty art on the wall, I'm sorry, but it always looks bad, guys. It never looks that good. Now you can replace it with a shitty bowl because you have someone. I'm just kidding. But yeah, you can, I don't know, paint and sips are just like run of the mill now or whatever. Mm-hmm. So you can like attend these kind of like glass blowing workshops where you either make a very nice fancy ass piece of glass, mm-hmm. but those are pretty expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But there are also classes where you can like use different glass pieces and beads to make your own ornaments. And now if you do that with your bae, like if this is your life partner or something like that, or somebody that you live with, now you have a thing of your own that you put in your house together. You're like, oh, remember when we made this when we just started eating?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really beautiful. So yeah, that's my cute date idea of the week. Just know that if you're doing glass blowing, you're probably going to be spending like $200.
Yeah, it's a very intricate technique.
Yeah, it's not no pains.
No, it ain't no.
But yeah, if that's something that you're willing to like spend date money on, yeah, go for it.
Yeah, you can make a whole fucking vase or something.
Yeah, that's
here,
cool. Yeah,
and it's I've watched videos of glass making on like Facebook. That shit is cool as
well. Mm-hmm.
So it's like
it
actually,
also looks cool.
It's so
it actually looks badass because there's like a lot of fire
yes!
involved and stuff like that. Yeah, go for it.
It'll be a good time if you got the coin, and if not, save up for it
or attend the ornament making class with your broke ass. No, I'm just kidding. Stay at home and make paper snowflakes. Remember we used to have to do that in like fourth grade? Make those. Now we're going to let you know that we're taking a break. We have no events to plug, so
we motherfuck that.
Yeah, the event is that for after this episode, we're going to do one more episode, which will be a group episode. Hopefully everybody can be there. And then after that, we're going to take 4 weeks off because... you know, sleep is nice, and extra time to just be with your family and your friends is nice, and things of that nature. And we'll see you again in January. Pay a hoe. If you love, love, love this show and appreciate the hard work that we do to bring it to you every week, we would so greatly appreciate it if you supported us monetarily and non-monetarily. To support us monetarily, we ask you to visit innerhouseuprising.com and choose the Pay a Hoe Once or Pay a Hoe Monthly options. Pay a Hoe Once redirects you to our PayPal, where you can drop off any one-time donation at any amount that you want as many times as you want. So that takes you to paypal.me/innerhoe. It's kind of like we're fuck buddies and we just call each other up when we want to satisfy that itch. If you choose the Pay a Hoe Monthly option, you'll be redirected to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/innerhouseuprising. On Patreon, you'll be given the option of setting a monthly recurring donation at any price that you want. And we'll return the favor with some monthly goodies, like we're in a committed relationship and we have some expectations for one another. So if you donate $2 or more a month, you get early and discounted access to Innerhoe Uprising events. And if you donate $5 or more a month, you get, fuck that, a regular Innerhoe Uprising newsletter curated by yours truly. It's fun, it's insightful, it's filled with offbeat stories about sex, love, and dating that you may have missed in the current drudgery of the news cycle. If you're strapped for cash or don't wish to support us monetarily, then there are other ways to help us out. You can leave an Apple Podcast review or a Stitcher review. You can comment on one of our episodes on SoundCloud or CastBox or Himalaya. You can tweet about us and tag us on Twitter or Instagram. You can reply to Twitter threads asking what your favorite podcasts are with our @. You can drop a link to your favorite Innerhoe Uprising episode in your group chat. You can tell your work best friend to give us a listen. Or you can walk down the street rocking some Innerhoe Uprising merchandise, which you can find on innerhouseuprising.com/merchandise. Now, let's get into this motherfucking show. All right, so now we're going to head into our topic of the day, and it is called Fuck It. So like we said up top, we will be interviewing in just a moment Kiawit, who is a badass trans feminine two-spirit person. But before we get into that, I think it's good that we do like these 101s that Akua has been producing before the show. So I thought we should probably do a two-spirit 101, right? Yeah. So we'll tell you a little bit about what it means to be two-spirit, and also a little bit about the native tribe that the guest comes from, because there might just be some things that you're unfamiliar with or some terms that you're unfamiliar with. So what does it mean to be two-spirit? This is from Everyday Feminism, which is a good website that I used to really love back in the day. So two-spirit is a label for LGBTQIA+ native folks that started gaining popularity in the 1990s. It's a modern umbrella term that is all-encompassing of an ancient concept from different tribes. So two-spirit literally describes having both a masculine and feminine spirit housed in a single body. It also acknowledges that two-spirit folks in pre-colonial tribes were often respected and influential members of the community. And then after colonialism, white people were like, that's weird. Mm-hmm. And then it stuck, sadly. Two-spirit is an umbrella term in some ways, since many tribes have their own language to describe LGBTQIA+ or gender variant community members. Someone might say they identify as two-spirit and also claim their tribal specific identity. And this was also set forth, I got this part from Wikipedia, this was also set forth to eliminate a previously derogatory and inaccurate word set forth by European anthropologists. I think it's still a derogatory word, but so I'm not going to read it, but it starts with a B, and it used to refer to any man not deemed typically heterosexual, so any guy that they thought was queer or effeminate or bisexual or anything like that. So a lot of Native folks set forth the term two-spirit to be like, get that shit the fuck out of here. Mm-hmm. Is two-spirit gender or orientation, you might be wondering? So some Native folks use two-spirit solely to refer to their gender identity. Other folks use two-spirit as a culturally relevant substitute for saying they are LGBTQIA+, and some folks use it to describe fluidity of both their sexual orientation and gender identity. It's really up to the individual whether they want to use two-spirit to describe their gender, their sexual orientation, or both. People make it a point to say that it's not synonymous with LGBT Native person. So if the person is using the term Two-Spirit to describe themselves, it doesn't necessarily mean that someone who is, like, let's say a lesbian Native American person says that they're Two-Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
This was from a very good video that I'll link in the description of this episode, What Does It Mean to Be Two-Spirit, by Geo Neptune, or hosted by Geo Neptune on the YouTube channel Them. But they made it a point to say that, and this should be obvious, but say it just for the people who might be fucked up, this is not a trendy way for non-Native, non-binary, or queer people to self-identify.
No.
So if this ain't your shit, this ain't your shit. Just know. Some identities that might fit under the Two-Spirit umbrella are the Lamana of the Zuni people of the Zuni River, who are now located in southwestern United States, and the Nadalihi of the Diné or Navajo people. So to get a little bit more into our guests' specific background regarding their Native and Indigenous identities. So our guest Kiawi is of two different Native cultures. One is the Yoweme, or the Yaqui people, who are an Udo Aztecan speaking Indigenous people of Mexico who inhabited the valley of the Rio Yaqui in the Mexican state of Sonora and now the southwestern United States. And they migrated from, or many folks migrated from, Mexico to the U.S. because of persecution inflicted upon them by the Mexican state of Sonora. Hiawit is also Yoreme or Mayo, and they are an indigenous group in Mexico living in the northern states of southern Sonora, northern Sinaloa, and small settlements in Durango. And also the guest mentions sweat lodges, and basically those are a low profile hut, and basically there are ceremonies performed within the structure called purification ceremonies or sweats.
Mm-hmm.
And now we can head into the interview. And today we are joined by Kiawi Vallejas. Kiawi, pronouns she, her, hers, is a trans femme Two-Spirit drummer, live percussionist, and musician from Tucson, Arizona. She's of the Yoweme and Yoreme tribes. Kiawi is 30 years young, an educator, a Gemini, and a total badass. She's a member of the music collective El Tambo, a drummer in the all-girl rock band Taco Sauce, and the creator of Ritmos Queer, an organization that serves to connect trans femme drummers. Welcome, Kiawi!
Hey! Hi!
Very happy to have you here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Of course. And yeah, so we're going to hop right into things and kind of go through like the journey of your life in chapters. So we're going to start with growing up. So I feel like this episode is going to tell your story in two parts, those being you getting in touch with both your Yoimi culture and your gender and sexual expression. So tell us a little bit about growing up Yoimi and let's start there. Growing up Yoimi and going to school and living with your family.
Cool. So growing up, and it's pronounced Yoeme.
Yoeme.
Which is perfectly fine. And it's interesting. It's there's two different nations of the same, or two different tribes of the same nation. And I come from both the Yoeme and the Yoreme, which are, is Yaqui is Yoeme, and Yoreme is Mayo. And the Yoeme are more from Sonora, Mexico, and the Yoreme are from Sinaloa, Mexico. So I have both of those within who I am as a person.
Thank you for correcting my shitty pronunciation.
No, it's okay. It's totally cool. It's all about learning. So growing up, my dad would take me and my family every once in a while to the Easter ceremonies. They call them the Fariseos. And the Fariseos are a Lent tradition. And myself, I'm not religious, but that took a lot of time over the years to really, wipe that away from and cleanse it away from me. I grew up Catholic, and the Yaqui are very Catholic people. They're super Jesuit. They find their expression through Jesus Christ. And you know, from the youngest age, I was always questioning the church. And I remember my mom being so uncomfortable when I did my first confession or whatever it was called, because I was laughing with the priest, and my mom was like, oh my goodness.
Do you remember what you said?
I don't remember what I said. I've always just been like a, like, not, yeah, I've been like a kind of like a practical joker, and I just like to make fun of everything around me.
Yeah.
And even to this day, like, seriously, like, my maturity levels have not gotten any better.
Oh, you fit right in. We are literally, yeah, 12.
Oh yeah, that's like the prime stages without, yeah, the awkwardness. Yeah. Except it's except it's super awkward for me because I started my HRT, so I'm like, what is going on with my body? I, yeah, feel so many things right now.
Puberty again. Yeah.
My tits. They're so sensitive.
Yeah. You poor
thing. So, yeah, getting back to it, just knowing who I was at a young age, but also not knowing who I was. My dad kind of like fed it to us in like little bits, but it was also like this very superficial way of doing it that like, it's like, oh, here's your culture, but we don't participate in it. We don't partake in it. We don't do any of those things. Like, none of my family cares about the native side of who we are. It's kind of like, oh, yeah, that is something that we are, but this is who we are now. And very assimilated into white culture, I would say. My parents were those people that, like, I very much, like, didn't come to the realization till recently. I was like, they are really, like, so engulfed in capitalism, in patriarchy, all of these different things, the het cis society. And I just wasn't really comfortable with that. And I just kind of, at this point in my life, I'm like, I just keep them at like a distance. Growing up was very interesting for me. I grew up in one of the barrios, one of the hoods in Tucson. I was like a kind of like a skater punk kid. And when I look at the pictures, I like think to myself, I'm like, wow, you were a really gay kid.
When you see it. Yeah.
I definitely had like this interesting fashion about myself that was like, oh, okay, I get it now. Yeah.
This was always there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was always there. I just had to figure it out because I always felt like I was being conditioned to think a certain way about my own sexuality. Like, some of my parents' best friends are lesbians and gay people, but that's all there was, is just cis lesbians and cis gay men in my life. And I didn't understand anything outside of that binary. Like, whenever people would talk about trans, like my family, it would be, it'd always be like, oh yeah, that cousin that wears girls' clothes, that crossdresser, that transvestite. And I was always conditioned to think that was like a bad thing. I'm like, I can't be like those weird men that dress in girls' clothes. And that's like part of like assimilating, a part of like this brainwashing of this culture, that there is a binary, and which, fuck that shit. And to me, I'm still in those stages of just being trans and getting gender dysphoria, getting anxiety and panic attacks, being out in the community. If I see someone that I haven't seen in a long time and they see me dressed up in women's clothes, and I'm like, oh gosh, they're gonna call me by my dead name, they're gonna do this, and it just like makes me want to stay inside for the most part. Yeah, I think it was about 2 months ago, it was one of these, because once I came out, when I was hooking up with people and all those things, I came out to them, and a lot of them came at me with resistance and a lot of violence and aggression. I remember this one woman had basically said, like, it doesn't matter how much makeup you put on, how whatever clothes you put on, you're still going to be a man. I'm like, whoa, that's intense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is like transphobic, like
it's attacking
me, like, yeah,
mad violent.
And I remember seeing them about 2 months ago, and I saw them, I ignored them, and they called me by my dead name. And I was like, are you fucking serious right now? And I just like walked to my truck and I left. Yeah,
I'm so sorry.
Like, oh, it's okay. You know, it's the realities too.
Yeah. I want to get more into your now a little bit later and unpack that, but just to like,
no worries. I do those tangents.
That's okay. But kind of just to wrap up like the growing up bit, I want to get at two things. So what was it like in school? Like, you were this punk kid and like this very like
queer.
Gay, yeah, extremely queer at the time, although maybe not knowing it or fully realizing it. What was it like going to school? Like, what types of things were you picking up as a kid about both like your native culture and then also your, or maybe not your gender expression, but like what kinds of things were kids saying around you that you were like hearing?
As this, like, and it was interesting, I was kind of like that punk kid, but not really punk, because I was like low-key listening to Avril Lavigne at the time. I
bought... Oh, but me too, though, honestly. Oh, like, am I really emo?
Nah.
Yeah! Yeah, I had to, like, low-key be, like, very, like, chill about, like, listening to Paramore and My Chemical Romance and all these things.
Yeah.
So, I was like I was really obsessed with music, obviously, mm-hmm. and I still am. Mm-hmm. I was in jazz band. I at my school, the jazz band were like the cool kids because I went to a fine arts school.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, oh, you're in jazz band? And this was in middle school.
That is so cute.
So I remember, you know, like the very stereotypical things just when I was younger. I would play with my sister's dolls. Things like that. I thought it like it was fun playing with them, and it was like fun doing dress up as well, you know. Yeah, and I would always think of that in the back of my mind, like when I saw other teenage girls get to dress in all of these things, and I was like, I just get to wear pants
and a shirt. Yes.
Yeah.
When I say
masculine clothes are very boring.
There's no options.
Yeah.
There was a pants and a shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is it. A graphic shirt maybe, and that's it.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards masculine clothes more now because I'm getting more lazy in life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You don't want the effort of mixing and matching and styling. You're like, no, I need a pants and I need a shirt.
Yes. So true. So yeah, the pants and the shirt are always what I rocked. I also was like a comic book nerd. One big thing that took away a chunk of my life was my parents making the decision to put me on Adderall. And Adderall, like, literally is like the worst drug ever, you know. And especially as like a six or seven year old, like that shit was at the like experimental stages. And I remember just feeling like I was looking at the chalkboard, but there's like no one inside my body. Like, I wasn't like reacting to things. And like teachers would be like, oh, he's paying attention. He's doing this. He's doing this. And I was like, but like, I wasn't a human. I was literally a robot, like, looking at you. So it took a lot of years to unpack that, about it just being like, oh, cool. I was like a little meth head when I was a kid, you know, and my parents were doing the best they could. They didn't know about those kind of things. No one did, you know. It took a lot of years for me to get back on track where I was, and comic books helped me with my literacy. And it was interesting with comic books. Comic books are so fucking gay. I have to say that right now.
Yeah.
Like, wow. To see, like, all these men in the most, like,
these tight
beautiful, cool. Oh, my God.
Bulges everywhere.
Yes. And then the women, too. Like,
they were
the
always
most voluptuous breasts that you'd ever seen. It's like, holy crap.
Always half naked.
Yeah.
Always.
That is a pretty, like, gay space. That's why I like Justice League so much growing up, because I was like low-key a pervert.
Yes!
You're like, oh.
Who wanted to see these things? And there's no adult that's going to say, oh, you can't.
Because it's cartoons.
Yeah. Here we are objectifying cartoons.
Wow. Thanks for helping me tap into that. I did not realize.
Yes.
I knew it. Cool. I knew it.
You're like, why do I like tentacle porn again? How did that even come about?
That is so funny. That is so funny.
So yeah, I would use that obviously to like understand my own gender expression.
Yeah.
One of the things that I felt was like the expression that I could be most comfortable in was my shoes. My shoes, and to this day, I still wear them from like to when I was a little kid all the way to now, like Vans have been my go-to.
Aww.
Like,
yeah,
I love Vans. They're gender neutral. Like anyone can wear them. You know, I would tell my parents like, please, 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 can I get these shoes? They're like the coolest shoes and they'll make me skate faster and I'll be a cool kid.
Yeah, Vans definitely had a good variety of like color and pattern selection. Mm-hmm. So I could see you like flaring out.
It was always like the most ridiculous colors. I remember this pair I had called the TNT that were red and yellow and like this really like fly checker pattern, which I
remember those. Mm-hmm. I remember those. Yeah. Oh, I feel so much nostalgia. We're talking about My Chemical Romance and Avril Lavigne and Vans. I'm like, oh man, let me paint my nails black and like wear my hair in that weird freaking way.
I get it.
Yes. And that was another thing, jewelry. Yes. I remember wearing the big chain balls from Hot Topic.
Yeah.
Oh. And then buying the hair dye at Hot Topic. My sister was back in the day more like rockabilly. So she was like showing me how to do all these things to my hair. My sister and my mom pinned me down when I wanted to get my ears pierced. I remember that day. Aww. Like they had to hold me down because I was like, and I really loved having my ears pierced. I would always have like little studs in my ears until high school. I think it was out of high school I started gauging my ears. Mm-hmm. I'd have my hair spiky, my comic book t-shirts that I was so proud of.
I'm like, yesteryear, because you know we're like coming to the end of the decade and everybody's making a big deal. But me and Akua graduated high school at the beginning of the decade. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, oh my god. The times. The times.
The times, where have they gone?
So thank you for walking us through that walk down memory lane. Let's take it to early adulthood. So tell us more about, I know like these two things are kind of connected, but tell us more about what drove you to get more in touch with your native identity and how that kind of like springboarded you to getting more in touch with your gender and sexual identity.
Since I would say until after I graduated high school, I wasn't really sure what I was going to do with my life. School wasn't really working out for me. I really hated school. Which was ironic then, because then I became like a consensus aide for an elementary class. So I started working at this school, and from there, I developed a drum and dance program for the after school program. Aww. With this other mom. She was working there as PTA, president or whatever. Mm-hmm. When I started working there, I was doing all these different things, and we developed this drum and dance group, and the mascot of the school was a lion. So the after school program was called Cub Club.
Oh, it's so cute. Oh my gosh.
Super cute. And what I was getting into with music was Brazilian music. Mm-hmm. So naturally we called it Cub Club Samba.
I love it.
And it was super cute. It was a lot of fun. That's when like I was involved in a relationship from high school all the way up into 21, I would say. And that was a really shitty relationship. The sex was like, ugh. It was probably like what made me not want to be straight anymore.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was like there was no exploration, no curiosity.
I see.
Or oral was off the table, like only missionary. I'm like,
Oh, that's not
like sexually deprived in like
I do not like
my
that.
First couple years of being sexually active. So at that same time when I was seeing that person, then I met this person I started doing this this drum and dance group with.
Mm-hmm.
And what ended up happening is that we ended up getting involved.
Mm-hmm.
And this person was married.
Uh-oh.
At the time.
Wait, and yeah. Were you still with your...
Yes, and I was still with this person.
Kiawi, you messy.
We like it over
oh,
here.
You don't even know
we
messy.
Like it.
This was like the first years of the most radical messy that I would be in like...
The awakening.
To
the inner
home
uprising, as we call it, actually.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And that's what it came from. It was like, yeah. Stemmed from like wanting to sexually explore into who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And this person like was like, we were doing things that obviously we shouldn't. And from that shouldn't, made it really super hot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
the
it's taboo. Always,
it's always the taboo. Like, oh.
Taboo is the best. But you know, after like one of the gigs, we would be like, "Oh, we're gonna go do this thing."
Oh yeah, we'll see y'all later.
Yeah, and it was really kind of messed up because we would play it off to where like. She would be like, oh, no. I think of him like a little brother. We would never do that. So it was like, it fucked me. It even like twisted the gears more in my head and grinded them.
Yeah, like this should actually not be happening.
Yeah, it shouldn't be happening. But naturally, of course, with any beautifully toxic situation, we kept on doing it. It created a lot of drama, a lot of... drama, trauma, and toxicity, that nothing good came out of it. The saga of like this thing of like being with married women, I was like, oh, I think I really like this.
Ooh, or being, you found your niche.
Yeah. And then not if not married women,
yeah.
Single mothers.
Mm.
And I was like, what is this? Like, who am I? And I would like play it off to the world, like as if I was like not this person either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would, I Geminis can like do this very mischievous thing of like living dual lives as if we never, that yet the other one never existed. And I'm like, that's really dangerous to play with.
Yeah. It's so interesting to know what's going on behind the scenes of things.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
this is a very nice drum group. But actually,
yeah.
And as you were, you mentioned this in our preparation call, as you were like, you kind of started out with Brazilian samba and then had this like whole journey of touching on other different kinds of music until you landed back at like your cultural music.
Yes. So from there, you know, I started with very stereotypical, like from early childhood. Or not early childhood, but from teenage years, jazz, marching band.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had a good fortune of learning steel drums at my high school. And from the high school, I learned Brazilian music, where this guy that used to be one of my mentors used to teach samba at the high schools. And from there, they had a community drum group called Batucache, where I learned how to play Brazilian music. And from there, then other people were like, hey, you're really interested in this. Are you interested in playing West African music? And I'm like, okay. Are you interested in playing Congolese music? Okay. Are you interested in learning Cuban music? All right. And it was just, it kept on like, the web kept on getting bigger and bigger, where I was learning and creating more ties, understanding everyone's culture and the significance of how Black and Indigenous people of these lands created music of resistance and created something to maintain their own culture and preserve it in a way that, you know, they were able to when they were colonized. Yeah, like learning about the roots of salsa and where they come from, of cumbias, of all these different styles, even in Brazil. Like, I had the good fortune about a year ago to go to Brazil and just see like how the indigenous and black people mm-hmm. created this music. Yeah. And it's like so mind-blowing. It's so beautiful to see how it's just everything to them. It's everything and anything. They walk the samba, they speak the samba. Yeah. The drums are everywhere. I wish it was like, I wish like all life could be like that, where you can just hear a drum off in the distance. And it's just like,
where in Brazil were you?
I went to Salvador Bahia.
Me too. I literally wish it was always like that all the time. Like, yes. In my head, when people are like, what's your favorite place in the world? That is like literally my favorite place in the entire world.
Oh my gosh.
World.
It was.
It's fucking beautiful.
And I stayed in Pellegrino.
Me too.
Yes. For about a month, I stayed there studying.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also had a lot of hard times with being there because I came to a lot of realizations that like Brazilian music also isn't like what I grew up with. It's not culturally part of who I am. Mm. And thinking about that, like within the spectrum of like other people that went there to study music, that their intentions, like it was like a lot of white people, a lot of like people that just weren't connected to that music culturally or through their families or anything. And they just like, whatever these teachers told them, they're like, it was as if they were like the saviors. Like, this is how it is. This is, they just know so much about life and this and this. And I'm like, but what about like what you come from too? So a lot of those days that I was there, I was reflecting in the apartment, thinking about who I am as a native POC. Like, there's a lot to unpack, and thinking about like, oh, I play Congolese music and West African, and there's all these white people in Tucson that don't question it. They like they want to be black, and I'm like, homie, like, don't you have your own culture? Yeah. Like, I'm sorry that this is like, you know, I would say that shit all the time. I would just be like the angry brown person. Because I had this thinking on this other level. And that's why, like, I don't participate in any of that stuff anymore. I stayed in my own scene where it's like Brazilian music happened, Cuban music happened. But it all initially went back to cumbia. Because what's amazing about cumbia is, like, it's straight out from Colombia. From it's Afro-Latinx. That's how it was created. It, without indigenous and black people, wouldn't have like been such an amazing thing that came out of that resistance. It like migrated through all of like that top part of South America, through Central America to Central Mexico, all the way to Sonora. You know, there's even native bands here in Tucson, or like within the greater Tucson area. And they're Tahana Atam, which are the original peoples of these lands that we live in. And they play cumbias, and people just go freaking nuts. It's amazing. They call it waila. They do circle dances. So when you hear that boom, 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 all the natives get up and they dance in a huge circle. And it's one of the best feelings. And it's all like cumbias.
Now we're going to read a message from our sponsors.
So, you just got engaged, and at first you're super excited. You sit down ready to plan the best day of your life, only to be riddled with worry about getting sucked into sexist, antiquated wedding culture. Well, have no fear. From engagement to wedding and decorating your first home, Zola is there, combining compassionate customer service with modern tools and technology. Zola is reinventing the wedding planning and registry experience to make the happiest moment in couples' lives even happier. You start with a free wedding website. It just takes minutes to set up and customize. There are hundreds of beautiful wedding registry designs to choose from, all with matching invitation suites. Also, your registry is on your wedding website. Guests can get wedding info and buy gifts in one convenient place. Easily build your whole suite at Zola, from save the dates and invites to day of paper and thank you cards. Join a million couples who have used Zola to take the stress out of wedding planning with free wedding websites, the easiest wedding registry, affordable invite suites, and more. You can build your free website on Zola and get $50 toward your registry. Go to zola.com/IHU and get started today. That's zola.com/IHU for $50 toward your registry and get started today.
So, you know, you were like in Brazil, you were like that kind of made you feel like you weren't tapping into your identity. Yeah. So did you like come back home? And I know you had like got involved with your local reservation and started attend different ceremonies there and stuff like that, right?
This is actually way beforehand. It was around when from teaching at that school. Mm-hmm. I started to teach music at a different school where a teacher recommended me. Mm-hmm. And I started to create a sound theory for children early childhood called the Experimental Rhythm and Beat Studio. It was in the middle of what they call the city of South Tucson. There's a separate city within the city of Tucson. I created this theory and everyone was really enjoying it because the children were really happy with like telling their parents about me, about what I was doing, and the parents wanted to meet me. And I met these two parents that were running sweat lodges out of their house, and they invited me. They're like, you should come sweat with us. And the house was like maybe two blocks away from the school that I was working at. They were a tribe. They were like Mexicanos decolonizing and re-tribalizing. Mm. So they call it like they were working through Nahuatl traditions, which a lot of people would think of as like Aztec. I would start learning about sweat lodges, about running ceremonies, about overnight ceremonies, about sitting up, eating medicine. There were so many different components and parts, but also how to be like a family within a tribal identity. Growing my hair out long, kind of dressing different, you know, wearing like which I still wear to this day, are called huaraches. They're so comfortable. I love them so much. They're sandals. I was learning a lot about who I was as a native person. And it wasn't a reservation. There was the Yaqui reservation and the Otham reservation in the outskirts. But it was people coming together that wanted to re-tribalize themselves, recenter themselves as however they identify, Mexica, Yaqui, Otham, Ramuli, whatever it is around Diné.
So like, how did that, I guess, feel like reconnecting, you know, growing up when your dad was kind of like, oh, that's what we are, but we don't really participate in that. And now you're like getting exposed to so much as a young adult.
It felt really good to me. It was also like really learning about colonization, like around 20, 21 years old. Obviously, once you learn about it, you're like,
you pissed.
What the fuck?
Yeah, that was like, also me at 21. I was so mad. I still am, but like I deal with it now.
Yeah, there's a different level of rage that comes with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, I was like trying to find any reason to get mad at a white person.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, nothing's really changed, but I'm very much more calm about things.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not about to like throw down or something.
Yeah.
Because this bitch was still shopping at like Whole Foods and stuff like that. Like saying like, no, but it's organic. I'm trying to be like better about like what I put in my body.
I love it. And you had a very interesting experience at one of these ceremonies, a peyote ceremony, that kind of like played a very important role in your life.
Yes, yes. So when I was introduced to medicine, peyote, I was fucking terrified because of like, I still remember to this day, the depiction of Beavis and Butthead do America, where they ate peyote, like they were eating a cactus, and they fucking tripped the fuck out. And I was like, I don't want to lose control. I don't want to lose my mind. How do you like stay calm about this stuff? I don't know what to do. So I remember eating the medicine. I was like, oh gosh, I don't know what I think I fucked up majorly. Oh no, I'm not going to survive. But I remember just like feeling this emotion over me. And it was very powerful. It didn't distort my reality either. It just made me feel like it took my subconscious and just threw it into my frontal lobe and just like made me see it. It's like peyote is like when it's done in an environment where everyone knows what they're doing in native ceremony where it's intentional, I think it's really beautiful. And the peyote itself can be like a psychologist. Like it can be like a mentor, a teacher, a maestro. And it can help you unpack things just by ingesting it and just listening throughout the whole night and talking to it and singing songs and feeling the fire on you, the smell of the medicine, the food that you eat in the morning, the happy smiles at the end of the ceremony after spending 12 hours in a teepee. It's just like a feeling that just you release a lot, but then throughout like the next couple weeks, you come to a lot of realizations. When the first time I did that, that's what it felt like. And then I started doing it more every once in a while, every other month, every month. And then I decided I wanted to have a teepee for my birthday for 26. And they say that's like when you come into full adulthood because your prefrontal cortex is fully developed at that time.
Me and Akua talk about that a lot.
Yes. Like,
pre-25, I don't know.
Oh my
poor
gosh.
Decisions.
Yes. Yeah. Hence why I was like getting involved with hella married women. I was like, yeah, it's fine. It's totally cool.
It made sense at the time.
Yeah, totally. Now I'm like, oh girl.
Yeah.
But so I did this. I had a ceremony for myself. We got medicine. There was a family on the Autumn Reservation that ran the ceremony for me, and everything was super beautiful until it wasn't. So it happened before what they call like main smoke, and I was just sitting there and I was in agonizing pain. What the medicine does is it ends up pulling out all your toxins from your body. And what will happen is regurgitation. To us, we don't look at it as a bad thing. We call it getting well. It's not, no one gets shamed for getting well. No, everyone is very supportive because it's like you're letting the medicine do its job. And that's what I was fighting at that moment. And I'd been in so many other ceremonies and I don't understand at that moment I was fighting something. And what ends up happening is it like vibrates amongst everyone else. If something's happening to the main person and it's not going well, that means everyone else is going to start getting sick. So I was fighting it. I could see everyone else's faces like it's like not chill right now. So I'm just sitting, like meditating, thinking, and like just something comes over me, something like visits me, and like it's basically like it's my two spirit, it's my femme, and like she came out and she like bitch slapped me, like seriously.
Sis.
Oh, I got a spiritual bitch slap, and that shit was like, it was so powerful. And once that happened, like, she was like, what are you doing? You know, like, you've been living your life in denial. Like, you can't live this way anymore. Like, you just need to let go of all that shit that was, and now you need to be who you are now. So then I got well, everyone was feeling good, and the whole ceremony just went according to how it's, you know, according to plan.
Wow. Yeah. Sometimes you just need to wake up.
This came
in this case, you need to wake the fuck up, yes. She said.
Wake the fuck up.
And after that, how did you act accordingly to what Sis said?
After that, I decided to make a lot of changes. First was actually stepping away from that tribe. Stepping away because I felt it wasn't a good environment for me anymore. Obviously, when you bring a lot of people together that are trying to retribalize, there's also a lot of toxic tendencies that like people don't recognize, and I need to get out. And I did that. And after I did that, that's when I started to like look at my gender identity and see like, okay, well, this isn't exactly going to be easy. You know, I'm 26 going 27 now. And I'm not sure like what I should do. How should I like go about all of this? It's not like I can just do this overnight. I took a job working at one of the organizations that deals with helping people with AIDS called SAFE, the Southern Arizona AIDS Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up finding a really dope space that was for queer youth. It was a queer youth after school program or during whatever hours.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I was like really, oh, my world was opened up to different walks of life within the gender spectrum. Because I just hadn't shared space with other people that were non-binary, gender non-conforming, trans femme, transgender, trans mask, whatever it is. I really hadn't seen that before. At that time, I remember I was just non-binary, and that's what I was doing. I was really trying to figure out my own like outward expression, but my inward expression as well. It kind of came in these small little steps. I would put my earrings on, and that was like a big deal to me. Like just putting on earrings, I was like, oh, people are going to look at me different. I don't know if this is going to be cool. And you know, it ended up being like, I love earrings. Like the bigger the hoop, the bigger the hoe, you know?
Yes. Yes.
It's my favorite.
An age old adage.
Yes. Yes. The hoops are classic, but I yes. also like to wear like super big dangly things off of my ears. From there, it was looking at my clothing. I think it was my shoes next. My shoes, I was like, I want to wear like cute sandals. And being at Target and being in the women's section, I was like, oh no. Is someone going to look at me weird? Are people going to think I'm a weirdo? Like going back to when my parents would like say like those negative things about like family members that are quote unquote cross dressers. Like, am I going to be one of those? I don't know what's going to happen. Like all that gender dysphoria just, builds up, and I was trying on the little sandals, and I was like, oh, these are so cute, I love these. So then I got them, and I just like kind of ran away. I was like, I have to get these before anyone sees me. But in reality, like, no one gives a shit. No one really cares. Like, and then from there, I would obviously like wear tighter pants, booty cut shorts,
yes, yes,
crop tops. And then like my most favorite accessory in the world is chokers.
I love it. Love it,
because I always low-key want to feel like I'm being choked. Obviously.
Exactly.
Wow, yes. There are good vibes in this space right now. Great vibes in this space.
Feels yes. like
very quintessential ho classics. I'm so glad that you are yes. here now on the ho expressive side of life. And I kind of want to get more into your style and how that showed up in like your work. So obviously, well, not obviously, because we haven't even talked about the fact that you also DJ and that you do live percussion at these parties, but you kind of were showing up to these parties in this very like feminine fashion, and that resonated with you, right?
Yeah. So I joined this party almost, I would say, a year and a half ago,
mm-hmm.
called El Tambor. The collective is called Sonido Tambor. They are my family. They are some of my closest and dearest people in my life. Sorry. When I talk about them in a very like intimate way, I get all teary eyed because I just have so much love for them.
Yeah. Akua literally always cries whenever we're with a group of friends. Akua will just cry, and we're like, "Are you just now?"
Because it's this overwhelming feeling of goodness.
Yes, yeah. I get it. Yes,
yeah.
You know, and it's so good to, you know, it you feel so grateful to have these kind of people in your life. That is just, you know, it's just ghost
community.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's how, you know, we have our families, and those are great, but then we have our chosen families.
Yes.
And those are definitely who those people are to me, because we're not just musicians, DJs, percussionists, we're also culture workers, and we look at everything from that lens. We're not just thinking about a party. We're thinking about how this impacts the community and the kind of music that we're playing. It's music that is resistance. And, you know, we're always out there making sure we say, like, fuck ICE, fuck Border Patrol, yes. Fuck patriarchy.
Yeah.
We say that at our parties. And we have the biggest dance party in Tucson. And, you know, all walks of life are there. And we get to publicly say that. We even have a cumbia song called Fuck Donald Trump that we drop.
I love it.
Yeah. Love it. And like to be able to like throw those things out there, like without like management or anyone saying like, yo, that's not chill. Like,
yeah.
We're very fortunate to be in this, those spaces, to inhabit those spaces during these times.
Right. And even just to place more context on that, Arizona is like a largely Republican state, right?
Absolutely.
Like a largely conservative state. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think of Tucson kind of like a mini version of Portland.
I see. Yes.
But that's how like Oregon is too. Oregon's very like, you know, very red state. And then it has Portland. You're like, where the hell am I right now?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's like Tucson, like a low key version of that. Where everything else around it, because when I see like a Trump sticker on a truck, I kind of like, I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of like mind blows. It's a mind blowing thing, but I know it's like the reality around here too.
Like, do these parties that you all do serve as like a safe space to kind of like step into your femininity despite being in like a place like Arizona?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So we try to create the safest space possible. There is security there. There is, you know, staff watching all spaces. But it's such a large crowd. Like, you can't, like, just, like, claim it's a safe space either. Like, really, no space is a safe space unless it's, like, you have, like, security at the door checking every person, you know, like of who they are, like background check.
Yeah.
So
ideality checks.
Yeah.
yeah, exactly. So it's as safe as we can make it. So when I started with Sonido Tambor, I came in just like, oh, I want to play percussion with a DJ. So the DJ took a chance on me. His name's Logan, Dirty Verbs, an amazing human, to say the least. He took a chance on me, and I had like, I brought all of my artillery with me. I brought like drums on drums on drums on drums on drums on drums on drums. I was like overkill, absolute fucking overkill. But I was like, this is like my chance. This is like, I have to show people what I got. After just like tireless efforts of trying to do music in Tucson, trying to convince people that I could play music. And after that night, he's like, that was amazing. Like, thank you for playing with me. And then like, you know, a couple weeks went by and he's like, hey, so can you play this party like every Friday night? And I'm like, huh? What do you mean? every Friday night. So that's where I was, where I had said, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. I can.
Of course.
Spend 4 hours on a stage drumming every Friday night till 2 o'clock in the morning. I will do that. So pictures, and I still have the pictures of the first time that I played there. I was barely growing my hair out again. I had cut it just for a cleansing. I cut my hair and I was growing it back out. I barely had just gotten a septum ring, all these things. I was in the baby stages of wearing earrings. I was still very much wearing pants and a shirt. You know, I was still at that moment in time where I was about to like unleash the Kraken of my gender identity. And every Friday I would try something new. So then I was like, I bought my first palette, my first makeup palette. And I was like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, but I'm going to do it.
We never do, right? Oh, the first one's just like, what the hell? I'm just smattering color on my face. Let me watch some YouTube.
Yeah. Even after YouTube, I'm like, you can't just do that. That's not like that. How did you get those perfect wings? Like, I still, that's some bullshit right there.
That I feel.
Which still causes me anxiety. I'm like, I'm going to fuck this up. Every time I went to this party, I would experiment a little more with my clothing, with my makeup, with my accessories, whatever it is. I'd get more risky with it. I don't know where this came from either. Like, it just like happened, because when I was showing my mom what I was wearing, she's like, so if you want to be a woman, you have to be a classy woman. You can't be a puta up there on stage.
Oh God.
You're not gonna shame me.
So I was like, I took that and I just like ate it up. I was like, and I embraced my inner puta. And
yes.
I even have a jacket that one of the DJs, Humble Lioness, Melina, gifted mm-hmm. me, and it has embroidered in the back, it says puta with a giant rose.
Oh, right.
So I wear that out publicly. I wear it wherever I can, because honestly, I don't give a shit. Like that, yeah. That is like my essence right there, is being a puta. And it makes me feel so good. Like, I think about that all the time. I take it with me wherever I can. So wherever this came from to just like put on these clothes, it was just like my two-spirit, my trans whatever, looking down upon me, like opening this up for me. Like, if you want to wear pasties on stage, fucking wear pasties. If you want to like wear a thong like rising up out of your pants, you want to wear those stilettos, like the makeup fucking look like as if a pixie came on your face with glitter. Yes. Do it. Yes.
Love it. This has led to you becoming a sex symbol of sorts, correct?
I guess so. I don't know. I'm all like blushing. I'm like, I don't know if I would call myself that though.
Well, tell us a little bit about the reactions from people that you've been getting.
Yeah, so
I think you're a sex symbol. Oh, I do too.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So when I started to fully be who I am, a lot of the DJs didn't see like the behind the scenes of like me interacting with the crowd. And the first time one of my dear friend DJ Q saw me interact with this random person that actually just came up to me, and she like literally stuck her finger in her mouth and like went like this, and she like put her finger all the way to my chest and stopped, and she's like, I just wanna, can I just like lick your chest? And I'm like, no.
Yeah. It's like, ma'am, but this is a Wendy's.
Yeah. But thanks for asking. And it's interesting with the interactions with women that I've had. It's more like there's like the fetishizing of me, which is okay, but it's still not okay at the same time. Like someone else like randomly had asked me if they want to like bite my ass. Like I was like, it's very endearing.
People are that you so out of pocket.
I know. And it was fine. Like I was like, that's cool that you want to do that, but you can't have any of this luscious ass. I'm sorry.
Yes, tell them.
And then the DJ Q, they were like, what was that? And I'm like, that's what I get a lot. Like, it's a very common thing. With men, it's like the exact opposite thing. It just like triggers me in so many ways because men either look at me as if I'm a woman or as if I'm this dude. And it's really a weird balance. I'll use a specific example. I was at the grocery store with my partner and this guy was randomly just like walked up to me. I was like, hey. And I'm like, huh, what? I'm like reaching for my knife in my pocket. I'm like, do I have to stab someone today? I don't want to stab someone. And he was like, you're that drummer at Congress, right? And I'm like, yeah. Nice fucking job. I love your drumming. And I was like, oh, fuck. I almost shit myself.
Why so aggressive? The most masculine compliment ever.
I know.
Great job.
Yeah.
Want to drink some beer and eat some meat? Like,
I know.
Calm down.
And I even, the most recent one happened about 2 weeks ago where I was walking. I rarely get off a stage when I'm at, when I'm at the venue, and it's an outside venue. It's a really big plaza that we get to play on. And I was walking back inside to get some matches for my cigarettes. And this one guy out of nowhere just like smacks me on the chest. And I'm like, okay, first off, I'm a woman. And second off, my tits are fucking sore. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And I was just like radiating with rage. And I look back at him like I'm about to fuck his world up. And then I look at him. He looks at me. He's like, fucking rad drumming. And I'm like, I just fucking walked away because I was just so pissed. I was like, what on earth like gives you like this idea that smacking my chest is fucking okay?
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like when like people who are just like out of whatever the dominant is, like your body just becomes for consumption to other people. Mm-hmm. So people are like, oh, trans femme. I don't know what that is. Cool. Like, let me engage. But like, no, it's not okay. It also feels like people are expressing their, insecurities with their own gender. Like, that's why men are being like hyper masculine towards you.
Yeah.
Because obviously, like, they dig you, but they're like, how do I deal with these feelings?
How do I deal with this? I need to push it down and show aggression. Like,
so strange.
When I'm on stage drumming, like the predator eyes that I get, the fuck me eyes I get, like, I've seen that shit. I was like, you acting straight, but you're fucking gay. I can see it. You want a piece of this shit, but you are too insecure about yourself.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, so like that's how this is showing up as a performer. How does this show up, if at all, with like people that you've dated? Mm-hmm. I know before early we were kind of getting into that conversation about that transphobic woman.
Yeah. Who was like, yeah, there was a different number of people that I was involved with, and I very much was like non-monogamous before my partner. You know, I had that example of that person telling me like, it doesn't matter how much makeup I wear or whatever, I'm still a man. This other person, also had said, like, was being super transphobic, and I told them, like, and the shitty part is that they're an educator and they work with children, and you think educators would think that it would be, they would be more open. Like, obviously, like, all the shit that they have to go through, they'd be more liberal. And this person is quote-unquote liberal, but they were fucking transphobic as fuck. Like, they were a white person, and they're even like, do you even know what Two-Spirit is? You don't know what it is. And I'm like, whoa, like, and I've gotten that from a couple other people. Like, you don't know what Two-Spirit is. I'm like, I'm sorry, but
I literally am Two-Spirit.
Yeah,
how much more do I need to know?
I don't know what to tell you right now, but so this person had basically told me, like, you need to look up what Two-Spirit is. You fuck like a man. And I was like,
I'm so confused.
I'm like, I'm not the confused one. You're the confused one.
Right.
So, yeah, there's been, like, several different instances, and other people have been more accepting of it. My partner, right now, she's fucking amazing. She always validates my identity. She's just an amazing human that's always like, you are a beautiful woman, and it's a very beautiful thing that we have, and she's just accepting of who I am and reminds me of, like, how much she loves me every day, and I remind her of how much I love her, and that I, you know, even within the queer community, it's still, like, seeing trans women as women is still, like, a very, like, weird place, you know? So I'm just very grateful that I have that kind of support in my life, you know, personally and professionally with all the Sonido Tambo. They're always like, hey, puta, how are you doing? Yeah. So it's very much like I have a lot of support. And I also get a lot of compliments about, like, what I wear and how I wear it, that a lot of people feel like it's helped them open up into their own expression. I will definitely be that person. I'll be in the front line to make sure that they know it's okay to express themselves whatever way they want. It doesn't have to be trans. It can just be, like, a queer person, or it can be a straight person that wants to wear makeup. Like, none of these things have a gender. We're putting a binary on it.
Exactly. Yeah, that is so beautiful. And I'm so glad that you have the support of both your partner and your community.
Yeah.
This reminds me of your organization or your collective that you're working on called Ritmos Queer. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I created this out of a need. And the need was that I always like to look for inspiration for my own work and see if it's out there. With other people and, like, get to know them or connect with them or whatever, you know? I wanted to see if there's any other trans femme drummers, like, professionally, like, fucking up the scene right now. And literally, I couldn't find a goddamn thing. There was nothing out there. When I, like, put it in Google, like, trans femme drummer, like, I was scrolling down and then I saw my Instagram handle and, like... Are you fucking kidding me right now?
Is it just me? Yeah.
What? And it's not to say that there isn't other trans femme drummers out there. I just don't think they're as accessible to find. And also, just being trans, it's just like, to be open, to be fucking up the scene, especially in a very male-dominated profession, like, that it's really hard. It's like everybody, like, anyone that's... a drummer that I know is either, like, super, super masculine, and if they are queer, they're, like, usually super butch. Not to, like, say anything about all my butch drummers. Like, I love them so much. Like, they always treat me like a queen, and I feel really good about that.
Yeah.
And I treat them like the kings that they are. Mm-hmm. But the only person that, like, I can look up to, really... is Sheila E. Sheila E is, like, literally high femme. She's not queer, or at least I don't think she is. Mm-hmm. And if she is, that's amazing. But she's like the only high femme drummer in the scene and has been for the longest time. And there's a ton of drummers out there. I'm not discounting any other drummers. But that's like the one I have to look up to. And I want to find and I want to create spaces for other musicians of all different backgrounds. And I think that's where it kind of came from. It stemmed from just not finding anybody like me, now finding people like me and bringing them all into this place so that we can start to see who's out there, you know, like without like outing somebody or doing this or this or this, you know, coming at a, from a place of love, of respect, of showing that like we need to change things, especially in the music scene. The music scene is so fucking toxic. All I ever surrounded myself with was toxic men. Toxic men, and especially in the drumming community, like there's those white dudes that love Africa, and they studied with this teacher or this teacher, and they've been given special privileges.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, boomer.
Okay, boomer. That's so funny.
But yeah, if they literally are taking up space, and I didn't notice that until like later on in my life.
And I'm very glad that you're doing it. Yeah, I'm sure that there are other trans femme drummers out there, and they're just like also going through the exact same things, and yeah, they're like, "Is it just me? I need a space."
Yeah.
So if you're a trans femme drummer listening to this, you know, Rebo Square, that's your spot.
For sure.
What you were saying earlier about the music industry also reminds me of the fact that you are in a rock band with two other women.
Oh.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Taco Sauce.
Oh my gosh. I just recently joined a rock band called Taco Sauce. We're an all girl, all femme rock band. And it's kind of hard to put a genre on the band. The band itself, like, we play a bunch of different styles, common base of rock and roll that like spreads out to all these different places. Like we have a Selena medley that we do. we do like surfer rock, you know, all these different styles. Yeah, it's a beautiful place because I had that platform to be with Sonido Tambor and do all of my gender expression kind of by myself. Like with kind of like the accompaniment of the DJ, but it was usually just me on my own. We would try to match and do all that kind of stuff, but I was usually just coming up with my own flair. So with Taco Sauce, like they're both incredibly amazing musicians. Like they're so fucking gifted, like beautiful singers. Like they're so amazing at their instruments, and I'm just really fortunate to be with them. But the next level of what that is not just that we're all women and we're women, you know, that's kind of like putting us in a box, but we can play way fucking better than most of the men in this town.
Yes. And, talk your shit.
And also that, like, you know, we teeter totter on like, who gets the gigs, who's the femme band in Tucson that's getting the gigs and whatnot. So we have like, I don't want to say competition. It's not competition either. It's like we need to support one another if we're in femme bands.
Yeah,
but
for
also
sure.
Like make space for each other.
Yeah.
But the thing that makes, I would say, this group unique is that we're all basically high femmes. And we love to just like make that known too when we're performing. Like that's probably where I've hoed out the most, and we match too.
Oh, I look good. You match.
I love it.
We match in our hoeness, and I really love it. The bassist, at our Halloween show, our Halloween esque show, she was wearing just like nothing but a bra and a thong.
Yes.
And kind of like this like really like transparent kind of like robe over it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's what we go for. And I remember her saying that, like, I don't care if anyone sees my ass cheeks or not. And this is just on a normal day too. Like, like the skirt's riding up all the way. And I'm like, you know what? I'm cool with that too. And it like kind of, it inspired me. Like, I don't give a shit. Like, I want, if you see my ass, then you're just going to have to deal with it. Either kiss it or leave it.
Frame, but don't touch it without consent.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh, I love it so much. I told you this on the phone, but I just want to make it known publicly. I will be coming to Tucson.
Yeah,
I will be there. We will be there.
We will watch you.
Oh my God.
We will be at the Cumbia parties. We will be at the next Taco Sauce show. Like,
yes.
That is a goal for 2020. Because,
oh my gosh.
I just love it. It's so fun. It has been a wonderful hour and a half with you, Kiawi.
It has been an hour and a half.
Sure.
Do you have any closing words for folks listening?
I just want to first and foremost say thank you to Inner Ho Uprising and everything that you're doing. Like, I didn't know y'all existed before you like came in contact with me. And it was, I got to see your IG page and your website and everything. And it was like so fucking inspiring. Like, thank you for all the fucking work you're doing. It's like, it's so amazing what you're doing. And I can't express the gratitude for even thinking of me or, taking a risk to just like ask me to do this. Like, I could have been any random ass person.
I told you, I felt the vibe.
Yeah, yes! We see our fellow hoes. We know them.
So, thank you again. I really appreciate it. And just in terms of just like what I want to tell people out there, like, you know, if you choose to live this life in a way that you're going to live the most authentic, especially being a trans person, like, know that you're supported and know that you're loved and that you're a special human, because trans people are like literally the most special, I think, humans that exist on this planet. And it's terrifying to live as that too. Like, when you decide to come out, it's not going to be easy. You're going to be supported and loved, but there are going to be people that don't want you to exist. And I want you to make sure that you're staying the safest you can. You know, I want you to, if whatever you do, whatever you decide to do, I want just be as safe, as smart as you can. You're going to probably make a lot of mistakes or put yourself in a lot of risky situations. But, you know, there are people out there just like you. And if you don't know who those people are, you know, just try your best to find them. Look for different resources. It's not going to be easy. But, you know, I'm always open to dialoguing with anybody that's out there. You know, I'm not that hard to get in contact with. And if you feel like you need advice, I definitely am open to that. And also a shout out to all my trans loves here in Tucson that have been a huge support to me. When I was not sure what to do to find my hormones, how to do certain things, how to navigate certain situations. And for that fact, the Instagram community, like the Instagram queer, trans, non-binary, gender non-conforming community, like, has been so supportive of what I do. And I really appreciate it. Like, everyone that I've got to meet already and the people that I hope to meet in the future, including y'all, I just want to say, like, thank you for just like giving me that space, giving me that hype when I just started to open myself up. And I'm barely like cracking the surface right now, and I'm really excited to see what is to come. Us too. Thank you.
thank you so much, my dear. You're so transparent and sweet and awesome. This was such a lovely way to wrap up the Gender November series. Thank you so much for being here with us. Tell folks where they can follow you on social media, any upcoming shows, where they can, you do so many things. Folks can engage with the things, tell them how they can do it.
So you can follow me on my Instagram page. It's Kiawi V. It's spelled Q-U-I-A-H-U-I-T-L-V. And then you can follow Sonido Tambo, which is El Tambo Tucson. And also Taco Sauce. You can follow us on Instagram. And then also for upcoming shows, the biggest show that we'll have coming up is called El Tambo Fest 2020. And we're already in the planning stages of it, but we have we're scheming to bring a lot of juicy acts, a lot of juicy DJs, queering it up, femming it up. So stay posted on that. You can see it on my social media, on El Tambo's social media as well. Taco Sauce will be touring in March, so just keep posted with that as well. We're gonna try to make it through the Southwest, and then go all the way up into the Pacific Northwest and then come back down. So just stay posted for all the juicy details. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We're definitely staying posted. Akua, El Tambo 2020.
2020.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm ready for a hoe trip.
Yes.
That was very good.
That was amazing.
Yes.
I did want to interject something when she was speaking about psychotropic medications, specifically her experience with Adderall.
Mm-hmm.
I am by no means like an ally to the pharmaceutical
big
person,
pharma, yeah.
But I do want to point out that everyone's experience on psychotropic medications varies.
Mm-hmm.
That was hers. Mm-hmm. And we are in no way, you know, advocating or pill shaming people who have taken Adderall and it works for them, who take other psychotropic medications and that helps them as a part of their mental health and a part of their self-care.
Yes.
It is different strokes for different folks.
Mm-hmm.
I have my thoughts on medicating young children.
Mm-hmm.
And those are my thoughts on medicating young children. But I have seen both sides. I have seen children on medication that are zombied out and not functioning. And I have seen children who became model people once you put them on medication. And in either instances, I have spoken to parents, caretakers, and psychiatrists to make sure that the well-being of the child is first and foremost, rather than the, you know, the people making these decisions on this person who technically cannot consent.
Right. So when the child is zombied out, that's like the type of thing that people should be looking out for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I'm always like, so can we scale this back? We got other
options.
She
seems not okay.
This is not okay. Yeah. And I'm like, all right, so let's try more behavioral techniques and scale down medication and maybe try when they're a bit older or, you know, see what works.
Because
That's not the purpose. That's not my idea of the purpose of medication, you know.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I think she was also saying, like, the fact that it happened 20 years ago, I guess there was still a lot of
development, yes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of development.
Yeah.
That hopefully those gains have been made. But those experiences are still occurring, you know, for some children and some people to this day.
Good point. Hua, you're so smart. You're so smart. Thank you. We hope you guys enjoyed the Gender November series. I sure did.
I hope you enjoyed this whole series month thing that we did.
Yeah, that was a that was an experiment that we took. And I think for the most part, it went well.
I feel like this was a phenomenal season of In a Hood, right?
Yeah, we did a flick.
And it's probably because I like things that connect. I don't know. I like themes.
Yeah, that's a good way to learn. It's not like, you know, you go to like elementary school and they're like, here's one subject and here's something completely different the next day. Like, you have to build upon things to learn things. So, yeah, we're educators.
All right.
Yeah, so we hope you guys enjoyed that series and this whole year of series. We're going to have one more episode before we wrap up for the year. But yeah, if you have enjoyed, you know, let us know. Send us an email. Sometimes, like, those emails really be feeling good, man.
Yes, write a review to offset that bad one.
Exactly. Write some reviews. Give us some 5 stars.
Donate.
Tell your friends. Tweet.
Buy merch.
Facebook. Buy merch. Yeah, do all these things. If you like us,
love
support
us. Love
us out loud. Love me out loud, God damn it.
I want to see it.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's another great episode in the bag. Akua, where can they follow us on the places?
You guys would like to follow us on the social media places. You can go to Inaho Uprising without the G on Twitter, at Inaho Uprising with the G on Instagram. You can follow us at Inaho Uprising on Facebook. Join our community.
Spelled C-U-M.
That's Inaho Uprising Community.
Yes.
You guys can follow, oh no, you guys can go to our website at inahouprising.com to pay a hoe, to buy merch.
Yes.
You can email us at ihupodcast@gmail.com. Yeah. Yeah. Send us lovely things. Yes. Ask us to come places and pay us to do it.
If you want to send us something, we have a P.O. box. Just request the P.O. box and I'll send you the address. Yeah.
You guys can follow me, Akua, at Hey Akua Girl on Instagram and Twitter.
At SlamRid on Instagram and Twitter, and Carmen San Diego for travel and food photos. Goodbye.
Bye.